While this action grabbed the headlines, the reality is that the SEC has stepped up its focus on cybersecurity everywhere.
Hello and welcome to Off the Books, where we surf the uncharted waters of accounting, finance, risk, and wherever else the waves take us. This episode is brought to you by Workiva, the one platform that unites financial reporting, audit, and ESG teams like your exercise and your diet goals for the new year. How are those going, by the way? My name is Steve Soder, accounting enthusiast and Diet Coke aficionado. I'm looking forward to debiting a great conversation, and I'm so happy to have you with us. We are also back off of our holiday break, and with that, I'm so happy to be joined by Catherine Tsai again. Catherine, please tell everybody about yourself.
I'm not an accountant or a Diet Coke aficionado, but I like asking questions and learning new things, and I'm excited to learn more about what some off-the-books favorites have to say to update us on topics they talked about last season.
Yeah, that's right. First, we're going to hear from Nick Mazing of AlphaSense to check in on SEC 8K filings that disclose cybersecurity incidents under new rules that went into effect last year. I'll point out that since we talked with Nick in early January, there's been even more of these kinds of disclosures, including from some very large and notable companies.
And then we'll hear from Nicola White of Bloomberg on comment letters the SEC has been sending specifically about climate risks.
Well, let's get to it. Without further ado, here's Nick Mazing.
We already saw the filings of three cybersecurity incident-related 8Ks in the weeks since the new disclosure rule went into effect. The first filer was a consumer products company which filed on December 18th about detecting unauthorized access to their systems on December 13th. They described the nature of the disruptions, including the inability to fulfill online orders and the actions that they were taking. The company was assessing the financial condition and results of operations materiality, but did state that the incident had material impact on the business operations. So they're looking at materiality from three different angles. The second filer is a financial services company on December 22nd. They did not specify the incident timeframe. They only said recently detected, alongside some of the actions they had taken. In addition, they said that the materiality impact is still being assessed. And then that same financial services company filed an amended cybersecurity incident 8K on December 29th that the incident was contained, the restoration was ongoing, and that they were still assessing the materiality. So not only did we have the inaugural material cybersecurity incident 8K filing in December, but we also had the inaugural amended material cybersecurity incident 8K as well. And the new cybersecurity disclosure requirements come in at a time of very heightened focus by the SEC on this issue. If you recall, the commission charged a chief information security officer individually in October with fraud and internal control failures related to a major cybersecurity incident. While this action grabbed the headlines, the reality is that the SEC has stepped up its focus on cybersecurity everywhere. For example, if you read the enforcement results report that came out in November, there is a section on cybersecurity, and the commission highlighted two actions they had taken, one against a publicly traded broker-dealer and one against an educational software company. And if we fast forward to January, the SEC approved the Bitcoin exchange-traded products, but if you read the dissenting statement by Commissioner Caroline Crenshaw, one of her concerns is exactly the use of Bitcoin as ransomware in cybersecurity incidents. And it was a part of her thesis that the product approval does not support the broader public interest.
It's beautiful. It brings a tear to my eye.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who reads the dissenting letters. I think they're more interesting.
Well, and it's great, Nick, that you and Nicola and others like send us that stuff. Like, it's really, I mean, that's awesome. So thank you.
Cool.
So Catherine, what'd you think?
I thought that was very interesting, but I also am really interested to dig into the other disclosures that have been coming out since we talked with Nick, because there have been more. There have been, unfortunately, more cybersecurity incidents, and because of that, more cybersecurity disclosures.
Yeah, including some that have said, hey, we don't know whether or not this is material. And I think that's interesting that they're making a little bit of a hedge, mm-hmm. like, we don't know, but we are looking at it. So just in case it becomes material, we've at least disclosed it, as opposed to, you know, not saying anything and then all of a sudden, like, boom, this big thing just drops out of the sky.
Yeah, yeah. You're alluding, I think, to a really big tech company that had an incident and, right, they made a disclosure and they said, we actually don't think this is material, but just to be safe with this new SEC cybersecurity disclosure rule, we're going to make the disclosure anyways. And so I'm wondering if, like, in the future, we're going to see some incidents that maybe aren't financially material or not financially material yet, I guess, but, like, have big effects on somebody's reputation, which could eventually lead to financial impacts later on.
Well, I'm 100% with you. And to me, that's what becomes so interesting and tricky about the materiality analysis. Because even if something is immaterial financially, remember the standard for disclosure is any bit of information, financial or otherwise, that a reasonable investor thinks is important. I'm paraphrasing there just a little bit. So I would say reputation, 100% would fall into that category, as well as I think you know, impacts to customers, other things that over the long term would probably impact you financially, but aren't apparent in terms of their financial impact right away. Again, I think that's what becomes so tricky about this rule, and I think we're going to get into that actually when we talk, when we react to what Nicola has to share. It's this non-financial materiality assessment that I think is really, really tricky, and I think that teams are struggling with, which is why you see companies saying, hey, I don't know if it's material or not, but just to be safe, I'm going to go ahead and disclose it. And I suspect that behind the scenes, the SEC is probably really happy about that because they just want this information out there and available to investors, and they're getting it, even if it hasn't risen to the materiality standard that's generally the threshold for these kind of disclosures.
Well, and I think Nick Mazing also brings up a good question, is if we have a lot more of these disclosures, at some point, does it change what is actually material? Because now we have, say, like thousands of disclosures of incidents. What then is actually material, and what would actually move the stock price if there's so many of these disclosures out there?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And I think what we're talking about there is just, does the baseline change?
Right, right, right.
You know,
okay.
Does the baseline change? Because, well, everybody was disclosing something like this, and if everybody's doing it, then it probably isn't really material to your point. But then are certain kind of incidents more material than others because that baseline has become generally established? I think you're right. That's going to be super interesting. You know, the other thing that I'll just point out, and Nick highlighted at the very end when he talked about the dissent for the Bitcoin rule, which he tied that back to cybersecurity because that was part of the dissent that went into that, says, hey, Bitcoin can support, you know, illegal activities and that kind of thing. But I just point out that when you're reading SEC rules, if you're a geek like me, the dissents are always more interesting. Always more interesting. Because in this case, the dissent didn't come from Commissioner Pierce, who has been the consistent dissenter on pretty much everything that Chair Gensler has tried to get approved. Again, I think that's super interesting thing to point out. That was definitely a shift in what we've traditionally seen with SEC rule adoptions over the last several years.
Yeah, if our listeners are geeking out on the dissents as well, we'd love to hear about it in the comments.
We sure would. Man, let's go down that road.
All right. Well, should we take a quick commercial break and then we'll hear from Nicola?
Yeah, let's do it.
Are you relying on desktop tools and shared drives? Stuck in a vicious, never-ending cycle of back-and-forth emails? Wish you had more time to proactively manage risk? Stop wasting valuable time corralling colleagues and updating status reports and start spending more time on what matters with Workiva. Create alignment across key stakeholders, yes, all of them, with centralized collaboration. Drive better business decisions with insights on demand, and spend more time on value-added work by automating those awful repetitive tasks. Plus, connect your GRC processes with your ESG and financial reporting all in the same platform. Seriously, see why audit and risk teams love Workiva at workiva.com/risk. That's workiva.com/risk.
And we are back. Next, we will listen to what Nicola White had to share from Bloomberg on some of the updates that she's been seeing with comment letters related to climate from the SEC.
Well, a lot's been happening. The SEC is taking a little bit longer to adopt a final climate risk disclosure rule, but that doesn't mean that they haven't been busy. So we are here with Nicola White from Bloomberg. Nicola, what have you been seeing?
Lots and lots of questions from the SEC staff to companies asking them tell us more about your climate risks. So this is tracking with what they've been doing for the past year or so after the agency put out, like it's called a Dear Issuer Letter, saying, this is what we're going to be asking in our normal review of company risk disclosures. And one of the letters that they put out a year or so ago said, we're going to ask you a lot of things about climate. And they just haven't let up. They're still doing it. This is their latest round. The past, I'd say, 6 months, they've really gone after lots of companies, asking them, tell us more about climate risk. This is important to your business. And tell us more.
And are there negatives? Are there downsides if companies are just like, nah, or is saying no not an option here?
No, absolutely not. Because the SEC is asking companies, they're kind of looking. So look, first of all, the SEC is digging deep. They're looking at companies' websites. They're looking at their sustainability reports. So if you put out like a glossy brochure that says, here's all the ways that we're, you know, protecting the environment, or, you know, trying to be better global citizens, and here's all the things that we really care about, the SEC is like, you're putting all this out and you're saying it's important. Does it have a financial impact? And right. If you're saying it's so important, why isn't it in your audited financial statements? Like, maybe it should be important for investors to know about as well, because it's like a different audience, right? Like, the people who are picking up the sustainability report might be kind of like, you know, customers or watchdogs or not-for-profit organizations, or just people who are kind of curious about environmental risk. But the SEC is saying that some of this stuff can have like a big hit on your bottom line, and that's their purview. They want to know how it ultimately affects the numbers.
So they're looking beyond SEC filings. They're looking at anything the company is saying publicly?
Yeah, they kind of are. I mean, their remit, of course, is just the financial filings, right? Like, they want to make sure that people are on the up and up on what goes into their securities filings. But in order to ask questions about those financial filings, they're looking elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And that's true for kind of anything the SEC asks about. Like, they will ask companies about things like, well, you mentioned something on an earnings call about, you know, like, name a topic, any topic. And they'll be like, why isn't that in your financial statement? This is specifically about climate. So they are just, they look at a lot of places, and for climate, they're digging deep.
If the rule isn't in effect yet, what is currently required of companies? Is it just to respond when the SEC asks for this more information, or is there other things they need to be doing?
Yeah. Okay. So basically, the overarching requirement for your SEC reporting is that if something is material, and material, of course, is in the eye of the beholder, right? But if something is material, you should be telling your investors that something significant is happening or could happen, and you need to just hum a few bars in your financial statement. And that could be anything. Like, that could be the, you know, that's the risk of like a cyber attack, or, you know, the risk of, like, we've seen, you know, in the past year, we've seen a lot, like a big labor movement, right? You know, a lot of retailers and the movie business, you know, there's been strikes. So if something that could you foresee, like a trend coming down the line, that should be in your risk disclosures. So climate is no different. You should include that in there. And so the SEC is just, when it sends questions to companies, companies just need to kind of take the position. Some of them have said, like, right off the bat, like, well, the reason we don't put it in our financial statement is because it isn't financially material yet. And the SEC is like not taking no for an answer. They're coming back and they're saying, well, explain why it's not material. Give us some numbers, you know? And so there's been some interesting examples of companies pushing back on the SEC, and the SEC sort of digging in and being like, well, prove it to us.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So if the SEC thinks it's going to matter to investors, that's something you should be addressing in your disclosures.
Well, the company we know of as Bed Bath & Beyond is now called Beyond Inc. The SEC said, tell us about the risk of customers going to competitors that they perceive as more environmentally friendly or having lower climate emissions. You know, like we all get a million packages and there's so many emissions, right? And Beyond Inc. responded to the SEC and said something like, okay, well, we went through, you know, 2 million plus online reviews of our products and 11 mentioned climate change. Like, they're like, our customers are not choosing us. They're choosing us based on price. They're choosing us based on speed. They're not choosing us based on, like, are we necessarily good stewards of the environment? So that was an example where, you know, the SEC was like, give us some receipts.
Yeah. Mm. That's so interesting. And I'm sure the answer is still who knows, but any hints of when they might finalize their ruling?
If anybody out there knows, please message me because we are all, message all of us. We are all waiting. It was supposed to have been, I mean, this thing has been delayed numerous times or a few times, I guess. Yeah. The latest regulatory agenda says by April. So that could be anytime between now and April. But like, we also have seen these things just sort of get, you know, the goalposts get moved. So yeah, we're waiting. And I should note that the climate rule is much, much more expansive than what the SEC has been asking companies questions about. The SEC can't, like, kind of what they say, front load a rule. They can't front run a rule. They can't be like, there's a proposal out there, so we're going to, like, you know, test the waters and see what companies will tell us, you know, just in case. They can only ask, you know, like, what is actually required. And things like materiality of information, that is required. So they have the leeway to ask about that. But they can't be like, hey, tell us your emissions or tell us your customers' emissions. Because that's not currently written in the rule, any rules. And that's what's in the proposal. And it's just so controversial and it's taking an awful long time to get through.
Yeah, and I know we've got the 2010 guidance from the SEC, but I can't wait for that final rule to come out. Well, in the meantime, thanks for all the updates, Nicola.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Okay, we just heard what Nicola had to say, and Steve, I'm very interested to hear your reaction because you didn't get to talk to her with me and Mike. So what did you think of what she had to say?
I know there was major FOMO going on right there. I'll be super candid with you, and I think I may have put this in LinkedIn, but that actually surprised me that the SEC was issuing climate comment letters. I guess I had become a little bit complacent. I think others had. You know, there's this guidance out there you know, from 2010 that talks about, hey, you need to be disclosing material climate risks. And we saw a spate of these comment letters a couple of years ago, at least I think it was a couple of years ago anyway. And generally speaking, companies argued that those risks were not material, which is why they didn't put them in their SEC filings, but they were talking about them elsewhere. Again, I sort of figure that issue's dead, but clearly it's not. The SEC is actively looking at those disclosures. And I think it's really important for companies to be aligning their teams when it comes to SEC disclosures and being sure that they're consistent with things they're saying on their website or in a sustainability report. And even if you decide that, hey, I've said something in a sustainability report, but I have not said this in the SEC filing, you've got to have that, what we would call contemporaneous documentation to actually state, here's why we don't think this thing is material that, you know, we said over here with our ESG stuff that we're not saying here in a 10K or a 10Q. I think that becomes super duper important just from a process standpoint so that if the SEC comes knocking, you're not scrambling and trying to put together stuff retrospectively when, boy, if you would have just written down a few bullet points, like after you had that conversation internally, that would save you a ton of heartache if you do get a comment letter from the SEC. I don't know. What'd you think, Catherine?
Well, do you think this is a flex by the SEC to say, hey, we can still come after you, maybe that's too strong of a term, for your climate risk disclosures, even though we don't have a final rule on that yet?
I do. And that's another terrific point. I'm glad you brought that up. I do think this is the SEC putting companies on notice that say, hey, you are still required under existing rules, or existing guidance might be a little better way of saying it, but you are still required to perform that analysis and disclose material climate risks. You know, if I could tie together the previous discussion we were having about Nick Mazing, I think financial reporting teams are actually in a real pickle. They're in a real tight spot right now because you've got these materiality assessments, one for cybersecurity and now this one for climate risks, that are largely non-financial in nature. As you just talked about, just because something doesn't have a financial impact doesn't necessarily mean that it's not material for disclosure purposes. And so, you know, we've all been waiting for the SEC to issue this final climate rule. And of course, when it hits, it's going to be important. It's going to be impactful. But teams, I think, have already hit that tipping point where they've got to be having those kind of conversations internally to where they are equipped to be making these materiality assessments. And that's absolutely not something that a financial reporting team can do on their own. They need legal, they need ESG, they probably need operations teams. It's a lot broader than that. And they need IT. You know, who could forget IT when it comes to cybersecurity stuff?
Golly.
Somebody had to say golly, and it wasn't me this time. Any other comments or reactions, Catherine?
No, I'm interested to see if there's going to be more letters coming.
Well, and I do think that when those comment letters are made public, I actually think that going into, so let's say that a company received a letter and they said, hey, look, we talked about it in our sustainability report, but not in our 10Q or 10K because it simply wasn't material. And then the SEC comes back and says, okay, hey, that's cool. Send us the materiality analysis. Send us, you know, how you came up with that conclusion. If that gets published with the comment letters, I think it'll be really interesting to read through some of the rationale that companies would be using to say that, hey, it was material for, you know, our sustainability report, but it was not material from an SEC reporting standpoint.
Do you think analysts will be asking about it in earnings calls?
Maybe a little bit. I think that unless you are a, let's say, an ESG-intensive company, meaning that emissions are just a massive part of your operations, to use that as an example, just E, but there could be other ones, certainly with the S, I don't think so. What I do think, though, is that if companies are leaning heavily into sustainability, I'll use that term generically, if they're leaning heavily into that as part of a company's value proposition, hey, we're a more valuable of a company as a whole because of what we're doing in sustainability. But then they go back and say, well, actually, we didn't put any of that stuff in our 10Q or our 10K because it's really not material. Then I think in that case, an analyst or, frankly, any investor could be like, hey, wait a minute. You told me over here that this was an intrinsic value of your company, but now you're telling me in this, you know, vis-a-vis this comment letter process with the SEC, it's really not. I do think that would definitely cause some red flags for sure.
Okay.
Well, that wraps up our discussion and our update from Nick and Nicola. Big thanks to them for joining us, and big thanks to you, dear listener, for surfing along with us back in the new year. I'm Steve Soder, that was Catherine Tsai, and this has been Off the Books presented by Workiva. Please subscribe, leave a review, and golly, tell your buddies if you like the show.
If you're watching this on YouTube, leave us a note in the comments or feel free to drop us a line at offthebooks@workiva.com. We'll be back next week with Amy Hafen talking about her journey to become a financial controls assurance director. Surf's up, and we'll see you on the next wave.